Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, October 12th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
global stocks stage a recovery while the dollar steadies and oil gains.
Trade tensions ease with the Treasury set not to label China a currency manipulator.
And strong trade figures from Beijing show China largely weathering the trade war.
At least three deaths are now blamed on Hurricane Michael, plus a top name is on a play to be the next U.S. ambassador to the U.N. I'm Michael Barr. Those stories and more straight ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, great showings for both the Devils and Rangers, but the Giants, not so much.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Friday morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Use an integrated investment account from Interactive Brokers to earn, borrow, spend, and invest globally from one account. Learn more at ibkr.com.
Stocks around the world staging a recovery following yesterday's sell-off, 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 24 points this morning, Dow futures up 186, NASDAQ futures up 104, that's up 1.5%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.6%, CAC in Paris up 0.5%, FTSE 100 up 0.8%, Nikkei 225 in Japan up 0.5%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong jumped 2.1%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 3.16%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.86%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 62 cents to $71.59 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $3.70 to $12.2390 an ounce. Nathan.
Karen, stocks in Asia did stage somewhat of a recovery today with the MSCI Asia Pacific Index finishing the day up 1.2%. Bloomberg's David Inglis has details from Hong Kong.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, the first thing I'd say is the bar for improvement from Thursday in Asia was set pretty low. We did get gains across the Asia Pacific, and because how steep those losses were, stocks reversed just a third of those declines from Wednesday. Now, all that being said, though, equity markets were on much more solid footing today, and we did see some heavy buying into large caps. Volumes were about a third heavier than a 20-day average. Japan closed 0.5% higher. Taiwan's equity market, which was the worst hit in the region during the rout, was up 2.5% at the close. The Chinese markets, though, were swinging between modest gains and sharp losses almost throughout the session. Mo Appleby, Citi's head of Asian trading, joined us on the programs, and he basically said, don't be surprised to see a technical bounce, even a sharp one, across markets these next 2 or 3 days. David Inglis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
David, thank you. Sentiment is also getting a boost from the latest developments on U.S.-China trade tensions. Bloomberg News has obtained an early unofficial look at next week's closely watched currency report from the Treasury. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
The decision is no. China is not manipulating the yuan. That's what two people familiar with the matter say. The Treasury Department staff has advised Secretary Steven Mnuchin. If he accepts that, it would avert further disruption in relations with China and remove a source of anxiety for emerging markets. Mnuchin could always issue a different finding. While that wouldn't directly trigger sanctions or retribution, it would signal a more aggressive stance, likely to heighten tensions. President Donald Trump has publicly and privately pressured Mnuchin to declare China a currency manipulator, but those familiar with the matter say no grounds were found to do so. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Bob, thanks. Meantime, trade figures out of Beijing show China's economy largely weathering the trade war. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
It may be surprising to some, given the intensity of the U.S.-China trade war, but demand was strong both at home and abroad. Exports rose 14.5%, higher than the forecast of 8.2%. Imports up 14.3%. Now, China's trade surplus was $32 billion, but with the United States, it widened to a record $34.1 billion. Economists still expect exports to slow, but they've been strong all year. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. While U.S. futures gain, Wall Street is looking to earnings from J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo to shape sentiment today. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Raimi Innocencio.
For the third quarter, analysts seem to agree that you shouldn't hold your breath. Not much is expected in terms of any fireworks. There may be some interesting lines about better cost control, but revenue just isn't expected to make major headlines. Revenue for JP Morgan and Citibank are expected to rise. For Citi, card revenue growth will be in focus. But for Wells Fargo, revenue is expected to fall by 2%, and it's really going to be about executing on core cost goals. Ramy Innocencio, Bloomberg News, New York.
Ramy, thanks. Equities in Europe are staging a tepid recovery while the Stoxx 600 is up 0.5%. The sectors that posted yesterday's biggest losses leading the way today, industries like autos, technology, and mining. Still, this is the first gain for European equities in 3 days, with stocks still headed for their worst week since March.
Italy remains in focus, with Parliament voting in favor of the populist government's fiscal plan that sets up a showdown next week when Italy's budget is due in Brussels. John Rowe is head of multi-asset funds at Legal and General in London.
This is the crucial moment we've been waiting for in the Italian situation. So they were always going to put in numbers that were going to rile the EU, and we were going to get this standoff where ultimately, to some degree, the Italians need to cave to some pressure, which would be a good outcome for markets, showing that the checks and balances work, or you get a kind of playing chicken with Italy knowing it's too big to be allowed to fail, and at the same time, the EU needing a credible threat to keep spending under control.
And Reuters reports the European Central Bank will not come to Italy's rescue if either its government or banking system run out of cash unless Italy first secures a bailout from the EU.
And as stocks sold off this week, hedge funds have held up. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with more on that. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. They've held up because they hedged. The long-short hedge funds, tracked by Credit Suisse, declined about 3% in October through midday yesterday. While some clients would probably prefer no loss at all, that's only half the retreat in the S&P 500. Fund managers kept leverage near this year's low. They also cut tech stocks, many of which were among this month's biggest losers. It's reason for relief, at least for a moment, in an industry whose high fees have been criticized amid underperformance. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak. Karen.
John, thank you. S&P futures again up 23 points. NASDAQ futures up 103. And straight ahead, the latest world and national news.
Yes, indeed. It is 6:07 now on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Hurricane Michael will probably end up causing at least $25 billion in economic losses in the Florida Panhandle and in other parts of the Southeast. According to a disaster modeler with Enki Research, about $3 billion of that will fall on the federal flood insurance program, and private insurers may get hit with at least $9 billion in claims. About half the damage probably won't be covered by insurance. Florida Governor Rick Scott.
There's a lot of just stuff everywhere, and so that was the worst.
At least three deaths are being blamed on the storm. Goldman Sachs Group partner Dina Powell is no longer under consideration to join the Trump administration as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. That's according to a White House official. Another person with knowledge of the talk says Powell informed senior leaders at the bank that she plans to stay. Five New York doctors are among 10 people charged with illegally distributing oxycodone. From his clinic in Queens, Dr. Dante Kubenbeng prescribed twice as many oxycodone pills than any other doctor in the state. U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman said the doctor doled them out during office visits that lasted minutes and involved no physical examination.
Instead of caring for their patients, these doctors were drug dealers in white coats. They hid behind their medical licenses to sell addictive, dangerous narcotics.
The doctors face up to 20 years in prison. Germany's next political showdown will come Sunday when voters in the southern state of Bavaria go to the polls. Bloomberg's Patrick Donahue has more from Berlin.
Bavaria's ruling party, the CSU, looks set to take a hit as voters turn to the regional Green Party and the anti-immigration AfD. That could make things complicated for German Chancellor Angela Merkel, an erstwhile ally of the CSU. The Bavarian party, however, has tried to win votes by campaigning against Merkel's open border migration policy. According to polls, the strategy hasn't paid off. In Berlin, Patrick Donahue, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. 6:09 now on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Giants kicked off week 6 in the NFL hosting the Super Bowl champion Eagles, who picked Thursday to play their most complete game of the year.
Wentz fakes the handoff, looks to his left, throws it back of the end zone, caught, touchdown! Zach Ertz working that left corner. What a connection!
Westwood won on the call. Carson Wentz, 3 touchdowns, outdueling Eli Manning in a 34-13 rout. Manning had a quarterback rating of 66 compared to Wentz's 122. Manning was intercepted and sacked 4 times.
We just got to do a better job of just executing our offense. That's what it's about. It's about, you know, trying to move the ball. Move the ball at decent times. Had some big plays in the run game, a screen to Saquon. We got down the red zone. We got to score in the red zone.
Saquon Barkley, the lone bright spot offensively for the G-men. 13 carries, 130 yards, and a touchdown. Giants are 1-5. Eagles move to 3-3. Giants still winless at home. Jets, they host the Colts on Sunday. And on the ice, the Rangers win a thriller at the Garden.
Brady Shea joined by Zuccarello. Couture back. Shea shoots. Score! Rangers win!
MSG on the call. First win for David Quinn, 3-2 the final over San Jose. And how about the Devils? They blasted the champs, the Washington Capitals, 6-0 at home. 5 different players scored. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, thank you, Rob. Tune in tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We'll talk about the future of footwear and fitness apparel with the president and CEO of Reebok, Matt O'Toole. You can catch that conversation tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. The Bloomberg Business of Sports right here on Bloomberg Radio. And you can download it online as an Apple podcast on iTunes. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Sports update brought to you by Investors Bank. Business wins here. Connect your team with the experts at Investors Bank for business solutions to move your business forward. Investors Bank, banking in your best interest. Member FDIC.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit Sector, SPDRS.com, or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. U.S. stock index futures are pointing to gains following modest rebounds for equities in Asia and Europe. Oil is advancing while Treasuries, gold and the yen are all lower. China won't get labelled a currency manipulator in the Treasury's biannual report next week. That's according to sources who tell Bloomberg Stephen Mnuchin's staff advised him that Beijing isn't manipulating the yuan. The IEA is cutting its forecast for oil demand this year and next by about 110,000 barrels a day. It also warns that dwindling spare oil supplies will keep prices high. And Davos in the desert is at risk. The event in 2 weeks is meant to show off the Saudi modernization plan, but the disappearance of a Saudi journalist has prompted some leaders to back out of the event. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen?
Hannah George, thank you. S&P futures up 25 points this morning. Dow futures up 187 and NASDAQ futures up 107, up 1.5%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.5%. The 10-year Treasury down 5/32nds, yield 3.16%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.6% or 41 cents to $71.39 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $3.70 to $12.23.90 an ounce. The euro $1.15.80, the yen 112.30. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Mexico Beach, Florida was ground zero for Hurricane Michael, the epic Category 4 storm that slammed ashore at midweek. High winds, downed trees, and streets inundated by rising waters took place around Virginia and neighboring North Carolina.
More than 900,000 homes and businesses in Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas were without power. There is word Christopher Nixon Cox, the grandson of the late President Richard Nixon, is likely to join the Trump administration as an economic staffer focused on trade with China. In the NFL, the Giants took it on the chin as they had lost to the Eagles 34-13. In the NHL, the Rangers won. The Devils beat the Capitals 6-0. The Bruins won. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Intelligence. Valuable industry data and analysis from independent experts, giving trading and investment professionals insight into where crucial industries stand today and where they may be heading next.
And good morning, 6:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm John Tucker. Well, another thing for investors to chew on. The focus now turning to third quarter earnings with J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo kicking off the season for U.S. banks this morning. And walking us through the parade of earnings, Allison Williams, Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Analyst, the unloved financial stocks. So they had their peak back in February, and maybe a little pop this week, finally. What are you expecting from the financials?
So obviously the questions get a little more interesting over the past couple of weeks, given some of the activity in the markets. But I do think fundamentally for the biggest U.S. banks, the key thing that we're watching is loan growth. And that's really because, you know, going forward, I think that is really what we need to get, you know, sort of the next leg of net interest revenue growth. We've had a great pickup thanks to interest rates. That's really helped the margins. But as we're getting sort of late in the rate hiking cycle, we've already had 8 rate hikes now. We should start to see deposit pricing pick up a little bit. That's something we're watching in the quarter as a risk. And to the extent that we also get curve flattening, you really do need loan growth to come through and drive the earnings.
Is that going to be reflected in the third quarter, or are we going to be listening for that in the analyst calls?
So, yeah, so I don't think it'll be reflected necessarily. You know, for this quarter specifically, what we've seen is loan growth expectations coming down throughout the year. J.P. Morgan, a little bit of an exception. You know, they said 6 to 7% revenue growth. Marianne Lake said in mid-September they're running at the high end of that range. But what we're going to want to see is, you know, what is the momentum going forward? You know, sort of what is the trend? We did see some pickup in commercial and industrial growth, but other areas like commercial real estate turning actually slightly negative according to some of the Fed data we watch.
Well, what's the key revenue variable here with all these banks?
So loan growth, I think, is really the key going forward.
Okay.
With any particular quarter with these banks, it does tend to be capital markets revenue just because that can be the most volatile, especially with regard to trading. This quarter...
Oh, guess what? looking at the vol, the VIX index, it's now 2274.
And that could be an offset of some of the action that we've seen early in this quarter is a pickup in volatility and pickup in trading. For the third quarter results, we likely saw muted activity. You know, not particularly strong, not particularly weak, equity trading doing a bit better. And I think that is also something to focus on because the U.S. equity price strength really, I think, provided some lift to the third quarter just in terms of the underwriting fees, in terms of the boost to the wealth and asset management businesses, and to the extent that we've have some give back so far, and to the extent that it really just doesn't support another leg higher in the fourth quarter, I think investors are going to look at that in terms of earnings expectations, and it sort of damps the possibility that we could get some positive revisions out of this quarter.
And make no mistake about it, listeners, the bank, they are printing money, aren't they?
They are printing money. We're probably going to see, you know, the high in post-crisis profitability, and you'd never expect by looking at the stocks that J.P. Morgan's earnings are going to be up 30%. But I think that's sort of what investors were anticipating when we got, you know, the big leg up at post the election. We had very strong performance in line with the strong market last year.
To borrow a phrase from Jack Nicholson's character, forget what movie, but is this as good as it gets?
Well, that's what we're wondering, right? So that's why we're looking for loan growth. We're looking for what is the next leg higher.
Okay. The conference calls. What are you going to be focused on? What's the key phrase you're going to be looking for?
So deposit pricing, as I said, is a key risk that we're looking at. Any kind of commentary around deposit pricing, the impacts of the flatter yield curve. What are the expectations and the risks related to the 10-year? Global trade concerns. What are the risks there? What are the banks hearing from clients? How is that impacting activity? What do the pipelines look like going into the fourth quarter?
Allison, thanks a lot. J.P. Morgan, they come out, 6:45 Wall Street time, Citigroup and Wells Fargo. That should be out about 8 o'clock, correct? Right?
I believe so, yes.
Allison Williams from Bloomberg Intelligence. She'll join us throughout the morning as these results come in. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special lease and finance offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And at 6:30 on Wall Street, good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth's accountants and advisors have helped closely held and family businesses reach their goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/success.
We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We are seeing some stability in global markets to close out the week. U.S. stock index futures are higher after the biggest two-day drop since February. Dow futures are up 172 points.
And European equities are rebounding from 2016 lows. The Stocks Europe 600 index is up 0.3%. Stocks in China rose 1.5%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 2%. Japan's Nikkei rose 0.5%.
China's trade surplus with the U.S. rose to a record $34 billion last month despite tariffs from the Trump administration. Exports to the U.S. increased 13%.
Meanwhile, Bloomberg News has learned the U.S. Treasury Department staff has advised Secretary Steven Mnuchin that China is not manipulating its currency. The Trump administration issues a closely watched report on foreign currencies next week.
Investors will also be focusing on earnings this morning with J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup all reporting results. Bloomberg's Jill Schneider has a preview.
Banks still look cheap heading into earnings season, with forward price-to-earnings ratios below the average for the S&P 500. Profitability at J.P. Morgan should benefit from higher rates, strong cost control, and healthy economic growth. For Wells Fargo, executing on core cost goals will be key, with third quarter revenue likely declining from a year ago. And for Citigroup, credit card revenue growth and credit costs will be key metrics. In New York, I'm Jill Schneider, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Jill. The International Energy Agency cut forecasts for oil demand this year and next because of growing threats to global economic growth. At the same time, it warns that dwindling spare oil supplies will keep prices high. Checking crude right now, Brent's at $80.51, while West Texas Intermediate is trading at $71.38 on the NYMEX. 6:32 now on Wall Street, time for the Volatility Index report. The VIX rose for the sixth straight session yesterday to close at 24.98. Separately, in today's extended morning trading, the VIX is currently at 22.56. That's this morning's volatility report.
Futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up 23 points. Dow futures again up 174. NASDAQ futures up 97, up 1.4%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32nds, yield 3.16%. And NYMEX crude oil up 0.6%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr and find out what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Hurricane Michael left only slabs of concrete in the sand at Ground Zero on the Florida Panhandle, where the Category 4 storm slammed ashore. Now recovery is just barely beginning from the catastrophic destruction, even as the remnants of Michael spread high winds and flash flooding as far off as Virginia. Florida Governor Rick Scott took an aerial tour of parts of the Panhandle hit hard by Hurricane Michael.
There's a lot of down power lines. There's a lot. Especially in Panama City, there's a lot. And so be really careful about that. There's still a lot of down trees and stuff like that, so be careful about that.
At least three deaths are blamed on the storm. The Trump administration is hopeful that Turkey will set free an imprisoned American pastor when he appears in court today. Andrew Brunson's two-year detention has strained U.S.-Turkey ties. New York City evangelical pastor William Devlin has traveled to the court in Turkey hoping to hear Brunson's release.
I know, and all of us believe, that he is an innocent man. He's ministered here in Turkey for 23 years, and he would not allow anything political to interrupt his gospel ministry here in Turkey.
Brunson was arrested on espionage charges in 2016 as part of a crackdown following a failed coup. British Prime Minister Theresa May has briefed key ministers on Brexit negotiations amid reports that the UK government is moving closer to a deal with Brussels. Bloomberg's Sandra Kilhoff has the latest.
The British Prime Minister may face a backlash from Tory Eurosceptics who fear it could leave the UK locked in a customs union with the EU for an open-ended period. According to the BBC, Liam Fox, Michael Gove and Dominic Raab have all expressed concern, while the FT reports that two Eurosceptic cabinet ministers are on the verge of quitting. Meanwhile, the DUP, who prop up May's minority government, are warning that they would vote down the deal because of Britain's acceptance that Northern Ireland should stay part of the EU single market under the backstop plan. In London, Sandra Kilhoff, Bloomberg Radio.
The case of a missing Saudi writer feared murdered could force a reset of U.S.-Saudi relations. Even before Jamal Khashoggi vanished, concerns in Congress were mounting over Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's aggressive steps to silence his critics. There already are calls for the U.S. to halt arms sales to the kingdom. In Thursday night football, the Giants were knocked into next week, as they were pounded by the Eagles 34-13. In the NHL, the Rangers won. The Devils beat the Capitals 6-0. Tonight in baseball, the NLCS begins. The Dodgers face the Brewers. Global news 24 hours a day, all on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. And among those 2,700 journalists and analysts is Luke Kawa, Bloomberg News cross-asset reporter, joining us now as we watch something of a recovery from the worst global stock rout since February. What are you looking at this morning, Luke?
More than something of a recovery. I'm looking at NASDAQ futures up over 1% and kind of S&P 500 and Russell futures approaching that kind of 1% up move. So I'm looking at tech leadership again, because the best thing I've read in recent days comes from Mike Purvis at Whedon. And we've been talking a lot about, you know, a rotation away from momentum stocks, from growth stocks, which is, you know, a proxy for tech, towards more value stocks during this sell-off. And he said, wait a second, the growth rally is the rally. And if you look at history, that's kind of true. Growth rarely gets oversold against value for very long during a bull market. So the fact that tech stocks are really taking the lead again today, I think, is a good sign for markets.
Yeah. So do you see momentum there, or was this major slump we saw this week just a bump?
So Danny Berger, my colleague in London, had a great piece a couple days ago, basically talking about how quant investors were rotating, that this was really just a big factor rotation, and they were cutting their winners. And as she was writing this, we saw momentum stocks, the MTUM ETF, on Wednesday, it suffered its worst loss ever. And then on Thursday, you know, still down about 2%, but a little less than the S&P 500 index. So perhaps this was just about kind of this style rotation that has now run its course, people getting worried, locking in gains for the year, and not wanting to see those disappear if you keep holding on to the high beta names.
Of course, earlier this week, we got or saw a lot of attention pointed at that apparent break in the negative correlation between stocks and bonds. And now the yield on the 10-year is backed off from that 3.25 handle. Does that give you some positive sign there?
So what's interesting is that this was a big fear, the idea that bonds don't provide that cushion in times of equity declines. It seemingly is bad news for portfolio construction of all stripes. What's been interesting is that the strategy you would think would suffer most, risk parity funds, have actually outperformed during this downturn. So maybe it's not as bad as we thought, A. And even if it was, perhaps it's a moot point, because yesterday we had TLT, which is the long bond ETF, have its best day since May 29th. And And if you're looking at an intraday chart, I'm just looking at right now ES1, so that's the S&P 500 E-minis versus the 10-year on an intraday basis. You'll see that correlation has returned over the past three sessions, so you're kind of getting that trade-off, that cushioning effect. But unless you're more long duration than other types of risk, it isn't. It's much of a Pyrrhic victory.
Is that cushion going to continue if the Fed continues with gradual rate hikes?
So what's the Fed's role in kind of this bond sell-off, I think, has been the Fed stopped talking with a lot of certainty and started to really de-emphasize the idea that they knew where the policy rate would end up over the long term. So, you know, we have that dot plot, and there's a lot of focus on the long-term dot. It's about 3%. And folks have clustered around that as kind of the idea of where do we think the 10-year will be. It's been a magnet, kind of 25 basis points either side during good times. So what the Fed has done in de-emphasizing that is kind of open up the possibility that rates can shoot higher over the long haul, but that's not what we're seeing in this bond sell-off. What we're seeing is just, you know, plain old uncertainty. The term premium has driven the most recent leg higher. So I think it's Fed agnostic as to whether we get that cushioning effect from here on out.
Just quickly, China seems to be indicating that it's weathering the trade war. Do you expect that to last long term?
I think so far the idea that, and, you know, we're seeing that its trade surplus versus the U.S. is at a record. However, you know, as tariffs really do kick in and bite, that should expect to fade. But the bigger picture here, the idea that a strong U.S. economy and then fiscal stimulus on top of it means spillovers that benefit the rest of the world, if not China, and probably moving away from China, then, you know, certainly other countries. It's something that should give global investors heart that, you know, the U.S. is not an island and some of that demand is spilling abroad.
Bloomberg News cross-asset reporter Luke Kawa, thanks for coming on this morning as we watch S&P futures rise by 26 points. That is a gain of nearly 1%. Dow futures ahead 197, 0.7% higher. NASDAQ futures up by 1.5% or 108 points. This is Daybreak. Coming up, the Bloomberg Morning Call brought to you by Columbia Bank with 48 locations across New Jersey. You're never far from their wide range of banking solutions. From personal to business banking, mobile and online, you can always count on Columbia. Visit ColumbiaBankOnline.com.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by Interactive Brokers, rated number one best online broker 2018 and a top online broker for the eighth consecutive year by Barron's. Visit IBKR.com/YIB to learn more. Futures moving higher this morning as we await earnings from companies including JP Morgan Chase. We go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are rebounding right now with Dow futures up 211 points. S&P's gained 27 and the NASDAQ futures climbed by 113. The U.S. 10 yield at 3.17%. Oil is trading higher and Asian markets climbed overnight, while European markets are posting modest gains this morning. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, the import price index, and at 10 o'clock, Michigan sentiment. Regarding earnings this morning, like you said, we're awaiting JP Morgan. They should be out any minute, and look for Wells Fargo and Citigroup to report around 8 a.m. In other news, the tobacco stocks are low on the pre-market as the FDA maintains its nicotine reduction focus. And wrapping things up, Netflix was upgraded to buy at Citigroup, Estee Lauder downgraded to neutral at JP Morgan, Halliburton downgraded to hold at SocGen, and Canadian Pacific upgraded to buy at Stifel. Live from the First Break News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And JP Morgan earnings just crossing the Bloomberg. Third quarter adjusted revenue is 1.4% above analyst estimates. It also reported a third quarter profit of $2.34 a share. Again, those just crossing the Bloomberg. And we're going to have analysis with Allison Williams of Bloomberg Intelligence coming up in just a moment. First, let's take a look at what's going on around the world. Here's Michael Barr. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. Residents of Mexico Beach, Florida, that stayed during the storm, are emerging from the debris with heart-wrenching stories. Others who evacuated are coming to grips with the fact that much of their community was destroyed by a Hurricane Michael, which took a head-on hit. The president's oldest son, Donald Trump Jr., is taking time away from Trump Tower to hit the campaign trail, holding his own rallies and headlining private fundraisers for candidates in Republican strongholds. and swing districts. In the NFL, the Giants lost to the Eagles 34-13. NHL, the Rangers won along with the Bruins. The Devils beat the Capitals. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. And we are watching J.P. Morgan just out with earnings that beat estimates. Reaction from Bloomberg Intelligence senior financial analyst Allison Williams, back with us live in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. Allison, the stock's up 1.7% in pre-market for J.P. Morgan. Your reaction?
Well, it's on the initial read, overall revenue looks perhaps a bit better. The earnings are better, but it always takes a little bit to kind of go through those and make sure it's apples to apples. The trading line, which tends to be one of the more volatile items that we look at in the quarter, you know, a little bit light, but essentially in line. And loan growth coming in 6% for their average core loan growth. You know, their goal for the year is 6-7%. Marianne Lake had guided to sort of the higher end of that range about a couple weeks ago. So probably want to hear a little bit more about that.
So no big surprise as far as the level of earnings growth for J.P. Morgan.
No, so as I said, a bottom line beat, you know, coming in and sort of at the higher end of the range. It doesn't look like there's a lot of special items in there. Usually, they do tend to call it out in the headline, and we don't see that yet. Profitability, 17% return on tangible common equity, so right in line with their goal.
So, what are you going to be looking for or listening for as the conference call gets underway?
So we're definitely going to be listening for any type of commentary around, you know, some of the capital market risks. What are the impact of the recent interest rate move? How does that affect things like mortgage banking? We've had this equity slide early in the quarter. U.S. equity price strength has actually been a positive for the earnings, you know, equity trading. And fees helped. I haven't seen exactly the line items for J.P. Morgan, but helping in the quarter. So what is the outlook ahead on that? What are the pipelines look like both for loan growth and for the investment banking business?
Much more to come, not just from J.P. Morgan, but from Citibank and Wells Fargo reporting their earnings in a little more than an hour. Allison Williams, Bloomberg Intelligence senior financial analyst. Thanks for that early insight. Now let's get more of what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the American pastor whom the Trump administration has been advocating for is appearing in a Turkish court today. Prominent business leaders are pulling out of the so-called Davos in the desert over the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And the Pentagon is temporarily grounding Lockheed Martin's F-35 after its first crash late last month. Also making news this morning, Donald Trump hitting the midterm campaign trail. Not just the president, but his oldest son, Don Jr. For more on this, Bloomberg Chief Washington correspondent Kevin Cirilli joins us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. Kevin, president's son, turning into quite the draw, not just for Republican voters, but donors.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, Don Jr. for quite some time has really been largely perceived as the child in the Trump clan that is really much more aligned to the base of the Republican Party and of the Trump political coalition. He is someone who has really aggressively hit the campaign trail, not just this cycle, but also in the previous iteration of it, and has really inherited what once belonged to Steve Bannon. And that has been fascinating to watch, and I think that he is someone who has long also been rumored to harbor political ambitions of his own. He has spent much of the past couple of years meeting with Republican donors, meeting with Republican activists as well, not just here in New York, but also all throughout the country.
It's interesting that you bring up that Don Jr. is taking the mantle of populism from Steve Bannon, when he also, along with his brother Eric, has the mantle of the family business. I mean, are we seeing a further blurring of the lines between business and politics in this administration?
Well, the sources that I talk with who work closely to the Trump organization as well as to the administration would argue that they've worked hard to try to build a wall, for lack of a better term, between the political operation of the Trump organization as well as within the Trump political orbit. And you know, I think that Democrats have risen concerns about conflicts of interest, not just within the Trump organization, but also within the president's own personal business dealings. And we've seen that play out. I mean, you're seeing those criticisms once again boil up now in the geopolitical space with the developments in the Middle East and with Saudi Arabia.
And wonder whether putting Don Jr. More prominently on the on the stump will further drive the base out to the polls on both sides when you have you know, not just Don Jr. taking on the populist mantle, but Democrats potentially seeing him as someone who is a prominent figure in the ongoing Russia investigation.
Well, you know what I think is also interesting is just how much the Trump political orbit has integrated itself with the Republican National Committee. And that wasn't the case during the presidential campaign. That wasn't the case when Reince Priebus was at the helm of the Republican Party before entering into the Trump administration. But now you see, whether it's through Vanessa Trump, who is, of course, the wife to Eric Trump, or through other top surrogates who had aligned themselves with the First Family, a melding between that portion of Trump world and the RNC. It's now truly President Trump's party, and that's going to have lasting impacts, not just through this cycle, not just through 2020, I'm sorry, through the 2020 cycle and the reelection campaign, but also for really the foreseeable future. This is no longer the party, the Republican Party of 5 years ago.
You mentioned the ongoing relationship with the Middle East,
yep.
And there is a lot of pressure on it now with the disappearance of Saudi journalist, Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Business community is pulling out of the Davos in the desert. How much pressure does that put on the president now?
Massive, massive pressure. Yesterday, President Trump telling reporters that he does not necessarily want to have any of the $110 billion worth of arms deals impacted by the developments with regards to the unaccounted for journalist Jamal Khashoggi. I interviewed yesterday Senator Mark Warner. Earlier this week, I spoke with Senator Rand Paul, a Democrat and Republican respectively, all of them calling for not just an international investigation, but a domestic one as well. This comes at a time in which there is bipartisan, virtually every member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is now calling on the administration to report back to Congress within 120 days using a nuanced procedural term known as the Magnitsky Act to call on the U.S. government to investigate this incident. And quite frankly, we should note, and this is the final point that I would make on this, Nathan, is that the last time when this $110 billion worth of arms deal got approved in 2017 following the president's first international trip of any country, he went to Saudi Arabia first. There was virtually every Democrat that voted against it. Now you have people like Republican stalwarts, whether it's Kentucky Senator Rand Paul or Tennessee Republican Bob Corker, saying, hey, wait a minute, this really needs to be reevaluated. So this is a major, major flashpoint in U.S.-Saudi relations and comes at a time in which U.S.-Turkey relations are also under the microscope as well.
And we should note though as well that Bloomberg Media is among the organizations that sponsor the Davos in the Desert in Saudi Arabia and is monitoring the situation. Bloomberg Chief Washington Correspondent Kevin Cirilli, thanks so much for this. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. Watching shares of J.P. Morgan Chase now up 0.33%. They were up more than 1% earlier. This is after it reported earnings just a few minutes ago. We'll have more on their earnings straight ahead as Bloomberg Surveillance takes over with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. And for Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow. This is Bloomberg.